by virtue of the economies of consolidation,
99% of chickens, 98% of hogs, and 70% of cows are now grown and processed on industrial-scale farms with antibiotics, pesticides, and pharmaceuticals. So we ask, have you ever purchased meat from the farmer who grew the meat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,401st edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Buenos Aires who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, consider Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food. The food we have traveled farthest from and have the least control over is the meat that we eat. The trend is awesome. And four of the nation's largest meat packers now control over 80% of the beef we eat. And the trend is the same for chicken and pork as well. The reason offered for the consolidation of the meat industry is the economies of scale advantages that can be gained by growing and processing many animals instead of a few. These economies are especially evident when it comes to the cost of complying with government food safety regulations. Given these economies and the consolidation they engender, most all of us now eat meat grown and processed with chemicals we can't pronounce and would rather not eat. This consolidation of the meat supply chain has led to lower prices being paid to farmers and higher prices being paid by consumers. It also results in consumers having very little control over what is actually in their meat. Everybody loses except for the consolidators. There is a solution for those who would like to eat what they believe is a more ethical meat. The solution is being proposed by many people, but one in particular is Joel Salas at a polyface farm in Virginia's Shenandoah River Valley. Joel says, what we need is a food emancipation proclamation and a marketplace in which there is no government bureaucracy to stand between farmers and the consumers of their meat. Salatin's food emancipation proclamation leads us to ask, have you ever purchased meat from the local farmer who grew the meat? Well, here to help us figure out how we can buy good meat from good farmers, we have Michelle Thorne, who is the executive director of the Good Meat Project in Portland, Oregon. Michelle, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, happy to be here too. My goodness, Portland, Oregon, good for you. Beautiful country up there, and you have rain and it grows grass and you have animals to eat the grass, right?
Indeed. It's a beautiful landscape. I am not in Portland proper, but our organization is headquartered there. So, we started out here in the Pacific Northwest, and the scenery is absolutely breathtaking. It never gets old to me.
Good for you. And as I understand, you are a professional communicator. You have a degree in communications and whatnot, and are a media professional. And all of a sudden, one day, the apple fell on your head, and you thought, good meat. How did that happen?
That's exactly how it happened. It was quite circuitous, actually. I did graduate with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Communication Arts and Design, which led me to a career in graphic design and strategic marketing for many years. I was a young entrepreneur, born and raised in New York City, and worked in that industry for many, many years, just honing my skills, creating beautiful designs, award-winning designs, and really loved my work. Simultaneously, shortly after graduating from undergrad, I got struck with some kind of curiosity that has never left me. And I asked one simple question, and that was, why are food companies lying to me? And that started this whole thing. And so, going from eating everything growing up, in a time where, if anybody, maybe I'm dating myself a little bit, but we've all heard about government cheese and eating everything and really seeing firsthand the impacts of food on our health outcomes in my own family, I decided to make a dramatic change. And so I did, and that circuitously led me here. I often say that I'm an executive director by choice. I'm a graphic designer and marketing professional by trade, and I'm a farmer producer by destiny. It really, this curiosity of wanting to understand what happens to our food, recognizing how far away from our food that we've all become because of the industrialization of our food supply. Really, I wanted to get my hands in the dirt. And so I did.
The key being curiosity.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't have curiosity, you don't really care what's in the food.
Well, I was kind of angry too. To
There
be
you go.
fair, it was curiosity fueled by a little bit of anger
What made
because
you angry?
nobody likes being lied to. I think that makes a lot of people angry.
When did you come to the realization that you were being lied to?
Well, I started recognizing that the ingredients in our food were adulterated. And I'm not even exactly sure at this point which food it was that really ticked me off. But it was probably an amalgamation of foods. And it probably started with sugar and high fructose corn syrup because it was in everything. I mean, maybe it still is
And
in
it is in
everything.
everything, yes.
So that's where it started for me. And the more that I read and I became, I was an artist, I wasn't like, plowing through encyclopedic level books. But after college, when I started reading about the food supply and healthier food options and what was happening to nutrient density in food and how that was causing curable diseases like diabetes, heart disease, things that we can control by, or I thought we could control by what we put in our mouths. I became a voracious reader. Like it was PhD level reading, and it really opened my eyes to what I have later confirmed by doing a lot of research on food in the last 10 years, which is there are only a handful of players at the top of the food chain, right? You talked about that consolidation in your intro, and four companies control 80% or more of our meat supply in the United States. And why is that? Is competition real or is it manufactured? Do we have the illusion of choice? I started really just going deep. And it started with fruits and vegetables and processed food, like ultra processed foods, because I was a vegetarian. I stopped eating everything, like every person that I know in today's meat industry, we become vegetarian because we want to really understand the impact of health,
Sure.
food on our health outcomes, or maybe it's an ethical thing that we're wrangling with,
Maybe
or
both.
yeah, maybe both. And at some point, another question reared its head. I went full throttle vegetarian. I was a raw food chef in New York City, executive raw food chef at a vegetarian biodynamic wine bar. Fancy, right? Like It was really an epic journey for me. I learned so much about ingredients, but I started asking another question, which was, why are we eating foods that are produced thousands of miles away? And we know nothing about the food supply chain. We know nothing about how the workers are treated. In fact, in most of those situations, particularly I looked into Thai coconuts, because in raw food at the time, Thai coconuts was a major ingredient. We were using them just like shucking coconuts all day long. For what? To make,
Good
a V,
fats.
yeah, a vegan flan, That was fun to make those things, but it really, I had a dissonance internally around the footprint of the food that I was eating. Why couldn't I eat local things and stay healthy? Why did I have to buy coconuts that have to be shipped thousands of miles from communities where the workers, I don't have firsthand knowledge of this, but the things that I read were abhorrent. The way that workers are treated, that are harvesting, Thai coconut just so that we can have a fancy dessert or some, like, it just didn't make sense to me. It seemed like it was a contradiction to what I was actually trying to achieve, which was this transparency in my food. And
Don't want to be lied to, do you,
yeah,
Michelle? Just
no, I
don't
really
lie to
don't.
me. Just tell me the truth, and
Yes.
I'll eat it if it's true.
Yes, but I will trust but verify.
Good for you.
Yes.
And we have a couple minutes left here before we go to our first break, but I'd like to take us to really quickly to the good food, good meat organization. So you must have made a great leap clear across the country for this one.
I did. Well, I was already on the West Side.
Oh, okay.
I made a leap for a different job many years ago, 15, actually it's 20 years. It's 20 years that I've been on the West Coast. And I made a big leap. I was ready to leave New York. I wanted something different. I had a 6-year-old at the time, and I just I grew up in New York my whole life. I was like, I can always come back. Let me see what's going on in California.
There you
So
go.
I made the leap, but I came into this role as a result of working with the organization where I used to work, which was the Oregon Pasture Network, which is a network of pasture-based farmers in the state of Oregon. And I learned so much through that
So is this when
position.
you made the leap from veganism to meat?
No, I had done that many years
Oh, okay.
prior to that, but I've always tried to source meat locally.
There you go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're looking for good meat. And where on earth can we find it? You go to the supermarket and buy a pound of hamburger. Chances are that hamburger could contain the meat from 100 different cows, from 100 different countries. And it doesn't get any farther away from your food than that when it gets right down to it. So we're trying to reverse course today. We're doing so with Michelle Thorne, who's the executive director of the Good Meat Project, Portland, Oregon. And we're going to ask some fundamental questions like, is it really necessary to eat food that comes from so far away? Or can we find food that is close and real and true? So this is the Food Chain. We will be right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Podcast. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, where today we're talking with Michelle Thorne, Executive Director, the Good Meat Project, Portland, Oregon. Michelle, if there is good meat, there must be bad meat. What is the bad meat?
This is a very interesting question because good is relative to each person. And so we don't take the stance of Oh, well, you have to choose this type of meat versus this type of meat. What we do is we help educate consumers and help them match their values to their meat purchases. So for any one individual, they might want to purchase meat from a local supplier, but they don't mind having a corn-fed, ribeye. And that's their choice, right? Like they can choose. It's about giving agency to consumers, educating them, but also providing transparency. Like you said right before the break, ground beef can contain hundreds of animals from hundreds of companies and countries. And some people might not want that. But how do you know if it's not on the label? How do you know if you don't have time to do the research because you're trying to feed a family of four, hold down a full-time job, and like get some sleep?
Right. And why isn't it on the label?
Ooh, that is the million-dollar question. They're not required to put it on the label. The USDA and the FDA do not require it to be on the label. However, in 2026, there is a piece of legislation that will become active, and it is about the labeling laws specifically for meat that is born, raised, and slaughtered in the US to be labeled product of the USA. So that's going into effect in January of 2026, and then I think fully enforced later down the line, but it's going to begin. And that's kind of a win. But there's so many little issues in processing. For example, when we import animals from south of the border in Mexico, even if they only currently, under our current laws, if they're only in the United States for a few hours before they're slaughtered, they can be labeled product of the USA. Most consumers don't know that. There's no traceability of the animals that are in our food supply. It's just complicated. It's very nuanced. So there's no, what I would say is there's good and bad are relative. I think transparency matters, and I think buying meat that aligns with your values is really important. That's one way to support your local community, your local suppliers, boost your local economy, ensure food security for yourself and your family. There's so many benefits to getting closer to our meat. It's a beautiful experience to be able to, meet your meat.
It's almost, Michelle, it's almost as if transparency is the enemy of consolidation.
I would
We,
agree with that.
I, though the consolidators don't want us to know where the food comes from or what's in the food. The
Correct.
less we know, the less control we have over what we eat.
You know why that is?
Why?
Because if we knew, we would spend our money elsewhere because there is competition. It's an in some ways it's an illusion of competition because of the consolidation, but consumers who these things matter to and they want to have their money make the decision. Like if you had two pieces of meat and I told you, hey, this one is from a single source. There's no salt injected in it for preservation. It's just harvested last week, and here's that steak versus a steak that kind of came through the industrialized food chain, knowing that many of these companies they're not just like raising meat in confined animal feed operations. They're not just feeding them commodity crops like corn and soy, which have chemical residues on them. They're not just price fixing. They're not just ruining the rainforest. Like all of those things together in that steak, people would choose if they knew. And people like me would choose the steak that came from a single source and was from my local community because I don't want all of that other stuff on my plate.
Is this exactly what the Good Meat Project is all about?
In a nutshell, yes, our mission is to advance an ethical meat system, honoring craftspeople, right? Farmers, ranchers, butchers, chefs, and also eaters, and educating them, helping them match their values with their meat purchases, but also together creating ethical and responsible pathways to the production and consumption of meat.
Your byline should be only for curious people. If you're
Well, we
not
want.
curious about your meat, go away.
Well,
And
you know
good
what's
luck to you.
interesting about that? Even people who aren't curious, because there are a
Every
percentage.
everybody is curious when it gets right down
Well,
to it.
I would agree with that. But some people purchase meat based on, and here's where my economics training comes into play. Some people buy meat because of price, right? That is their leading anchor in their decision making. It's price, it's convenience. So they will only buy meat from the grocery store, no matter what is behind that. That's just what they're going to do.
Sure.
And so, is there curiosity? I would agree with you that there is likely some curiosity, but it doesn't trump how much the meat costs and
Right.
how convenient it is for them.
Well, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
Correct. It isn't.
It
There
isn't.
are many other externalized costs that we don't see
That's right.
that are equally, if not more, harmful to the planet, the animals, and us as humans.
So your job as executive director of the Good Meat Project essentially is to feed people with curiosity and help them find their own way in the meat, in the world of meat. And when it gets right down to it, there really is a lot of choice once we open our eyes and start looking for the choices.
Correct.
And how do you help them do that? What is your first step?
The first step, so I think the entry point for a lot of people is that curiosity. They're concerned about all of the problems in the meat industry. So the first thing that we try to do to help consumers is help them find it. How do they find meat that matches their values? There are many directories that you can find online that have farmers listing. There's other directories that have restaurants listings. And then there are, other finders. So our Good Meat Finder is really one of the first points of entry for the people that find us. And
A good meat finder at the Good Meat Project, right?
yes, goodmeatproject.org/good-meat-finder.
Now, wait a minute. This is an incredibly attractive website that you have.
Well, thank you.
So that has a lot to say about you. And as I was going through this, I thought there's a clever eye that put this together. And it's a good, really nice website. So good information from a good website. Good start.
Yes, we are lucky to have some amazing website developers. And, I didn't really, as a graphic designer, I didn't really play a role in the website. It was done right as I was coming into the leadership transition here at the
Oh.
Good Meat Project. So, but
Well, it attracted you then.
I do agree. It is well done and is visually appealing. So getting to the Good Meat Finder is really easy. It's right on our homepage in our main navigation. And that is kind of the first point of entry. And what makes it unique is that it doesn't just list farmers and ranchers. It lists farmers, ranchers, butcher shops, retailers, and restaurants. So it helps consumers match their values, whatever they are, whether they want to support, say, for example, a woman-owned butcher shop or a veteran-owned farmer and rancher, or they want to go to a restaurant that is sourcing locally and supporting their local community. We're building that. We launched it in 2024, in September of 2024. So it's just been 1 year, and it was supported in part by the ASPCA's Fund and Factory Farming. So they're very committed, demonstrably, into helping consumers find ethical meat options. So that's the first point of entry. I would say another point of entry is our Good Meat Journal, and that is our editorial publication where we offer a lot of education to consumers, and it's exclusive content. So sign up for the Good Meat Journal. It's a quarterly journal, and it follows our seasons. And those seasons are: in January is the season of the chef, April is season of the farmer, July is the season of the eater, and October is the season of the butcher. And we share recipes. So, for example, in last month's or last quarter's journal, which was the season of the eater, I shared my, not really a recipe, but my experience canning whole chickens, which is, it transformed my life anyway. And we
So
shared,
you raise the chickens too, do you not?
I did raise the chickens, and I butchered the chickens, and then I canned them for long-term storage.
So here we are, a well-educated New York City graphic designer canning her own chickens in Oregon.
Yes,
Good for
the
you.
many, many unconventionalities behind all of that. But it's made me really appreciate farmers and ranchers who do this work every day to bring food to our tables.
For the Good Meat Project to work and all of the similar efforts being put forth throughout the country, we all must realize, I think, that it is an entire community that we need to bring together, which is to say, it's not just the consumer, hey, go out and buy this food, please. It's the farmer, it is the, like you say, the butcher. And so on and so on and so on. And so it is really an entire community. And that's one of the things I noticed about the Good Meat Project's website is that you don't just focus on the consumer. So here's where consumers start. Where does the farmer start?
So one of the things that I believe we do really well is we connect people across the meat value chain. And farmers, in fact, a lot of our programmatic work started with farmers. So we have three flagship programs. One of them is our FARMIN program, which is an acronym for Farmer and Rancher Marketing Innovation Network, where we share a lot of peer-to-peer education, online education, and resources, technical assistance to help farmers build their brand, reach customers more effectively, and really reach customers, right? Because
Which is
customers
what
are the key for
farmers used to
everybody.
do a lot when in the winter they would go to convocations about marketing and whatnot, and they'd
Yeah.
talk with their neighbor and what do you
Sure.
do? And this is what I do, and does this
Sure.
work and does that work? And so providing
Absolutely.
a forum like that is a valuable service for sure.
Indeed. And a lot of it is free. We have a lot of downloadable resources, done for you services, and all of those things. Because farmers want to be farmers. They don't all want to be marketers, and they're not all marketers, and we recognize that.
Most don't want to be marketers,
Yes.
but they have to be
Sure.
if they want to survive and prosper, have to figure
Absolutely.
out.
Absolutely.
Otherwise they're selling commodities into a commodity marketplace that
Sure.
cares nothing about the source of the food or anything. Because once
They have to be able to tell their story.
they have to have provenance. It has to have a story.
Yep.
And so if you want to sell to directly to people, you have to give them a reason to want to buy you instead of that shrink wrap stuff at the supermarket.
We often tell farmers that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it.
Very good.
That's really one of the things that we teach farmers and ranchers in all of our marketing workshops, just to help them understand, like, even if they don't want to become marketers, they're still responsible for running their business, right? And staying profitable and determining what their unique selling proposition is and why do people want to buy from them versus the grocery store or even their competition. And
I have
so
a good saying to you that you can use. He who has a thing to sell and goes and whispers in a well, not so apt to get the dollars as she who climbs a tree and hollers.
I love that.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we are loving it right now. We're talking about good meat and the Good Meat Project with the executive director, Michelle Thorne, Portland, Oregon, up there, a former New York City girl. And we're talking about the community of good food. Starts with a farmer, a relationship between a farmer and a consumer. And we build on that. And that's exactly what we're doing as we speak. We're building on that community. And when we come back from this break, we're going to continue building on that and hopefully teach everybody how to find good meat. So do stay tuned. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. Today we're eating good meat with the help of the Good Meat Project and Michelle Thorne, who is in Oregon, but really across the country, right? Your efforts to develop this Good Meat Project is nationwide. There's no
Yes.
reason just to have it up in Portland so you could share with the rest of us.
Yes.
Because when it gets right down to it, we're all looking for good meat. We all want to eat good food. Even those of us who aren't eating good food, I suspect, wish they were. So we're helping them out today, and we're focusing on meat because if there's one thing we've grown away from, it's our meat. And as a consequence, just a few companies control most all of the meat that we eat. It doesn't have to be that way.
No.
So we're working on finding a different way. So, to me, Michelle Thorne, the greatest difficulty for local meat has been in the processing of the meat. And it seems like the consolidators have done a great job of making the government establish so many rules and regulations that you almost have to have a fleet of lawyers to be able to butcher an animal and sell it to your friend. Now, Joel Salatin, there in Virginia, says what we need is a meat emancipation proclamation.
Great question. I think the government would say to regulate, to and regulate is code for
Restrict.
or money,
Yes.
right? Let's make more money. Let's tax everybody. Let's put these restrictions on so that for I try to stay out of like the politics of food, even though it gets harder and harder every day. But I think that the distance between our food has made it easy for consolidators. And processing is a huge bottleneck, especially for small producers all across the country in all states. Obviously there are many states, including the state of Oregon, that has put several million dollars into bolstering processing facilities, helping them update equipment, increase holding pens, increase freezer space, all of those things. And it has improved the conditions for processing in the state of Oregon, and also, in fact, in Oregon, there's a state inspection which is on par with federal ins inspection, which the difference between a state inspected facility and a federally inspected facility, in the state of Oregon anyway, is minimal. But in many states, they don't even have a state inspection program. They have a thing called, you've got USDA inspected and you've got cut and wrap services, which are kind of two different pathways, two distribution pathways for smaller producers. If you are lucky enough to have a federally inspected processing facility near you that you can take your livestock to, then that means you can have your meat in the retail distribution and wholesale
Right.
distribution channels.
But if you can't,
If you can't, you're selling direct to consumer only, or you're bringing in box beef, butchering it, and selling it in your meat case.
right.
Right? So.
So over the past decade, I've noticed an ever increasing utilization of the internet to sell direct to consumers. And it now seems almost rampant that individual farmers in Alabama can sell their beef to me in California
Yes.
or anywhere. And yet, to do that, you still need the butcher.
Yes. Well,
So.
there's a caveat there. So, yes. If you're in California and the farmer is in Alabama, you still need a federally inspected processing facility for you to get that meat. However, if you're in California and the farmer is in California, you can purchase the animal in shares. So you can purchase a quarter, a half, or a whole animal, whether it is beef, pork, lamb, goat. Right. And you can purchase that animal directly from the farmer. You don't actually take possession of the animal, but you take ownership of it once the transaction, once you put a deposit down, say on a whole quarter or half share, right? And then once the animal goes to harvest, then that the possession of the animal is transferred to the butcher. So the butcher now has the animal, but you are still the owner of the animal. Then you do your cut sheet. You tell the butcher, I want my steaks cut 1.5 inch. I want 2 per pack. I want 1.5 pound ground beef packs. I want bone-in ribeye or whatever you want to choose in your cut sheet with the butcher.
Yes,
And then,
bone-in ribeye. Yes.
yeah, it's 100% more flavorful. Bone-in pork chops, the whole thing. And then the butcher will tell you, okay, I have cut up your share and it is frozen for you. And now you come and pick it up. You pay the butcher what you owe the butcher. You've already paid the farmer what you owe the farmer. And all of that is determined off of the hanging weight of the animal. So it's not the live weight, which is when the animal is
Sure.
alive, it's the hanging weight. And then there's a finished weight.
It's
So the
the eating
hanging weight.
weight.
Yes, the hanging weight is includes it does not include the head, hooves, hide, and internal
Right.
organs, right? But it does include some bones that, that finished weight may or may not include. So it's
Right.
usually a 25 to 30% loss from hanging weight to finished weight, but you're still getting the benefit of paying one price per pound. And with the increase in price of beef, I read something today, ground beef is at an all-time high right now. Paying one price per pound for everything, and that includes ground, roast, steaks, tenderloin, short ribs, even cuts that you may not even be familiar with, like the bavette or the picanha or, the Delmonico steak. You can tell your butcher how to process or cut the beef. Or, if you are buying a whole hog or, a whole lamb, you can really be very specific in those instructions and have access to amazing cuts of meat that you wouldn't normally have access to at the grocery
So
store.
is there a chain of custody on the meat so that you know I want to buy that cow? Would you get that
Not
cow?
typically. I mean, maybe with really, really small scale
Right.
producers. And if you built a relationship with your farmer, I have built a relationship with my farmer. So
Food with its
I,
farmer's face on it, right?
yeah, I know which animal is going to be mine. And I go and I meet that animal before it's harvested because that's the type of connection that I want to have with my food. And it is humbling. It is really a precious, before this industrialized food revolution that happened, we as humans had relationship with animals and we had relationship with the
Very much
land,
so.
right?
Very
So there
much
was
so.
it was that trifecta: humans, land, and animals. And I love having that, and I hope that more people endeavor to have that connection with their food. Farmers who are raising animals on pasture and on land, open lands, federal lands, private land, it doesn't even matter. But they have a relationship with the animal. They have a relationship with that land. And being a part of that is so meaningful. That's what we're endeavoring to do at the Good Meat Project is help connect people across the value chain so that they can have this experience, that they can be more involved in their food production and get the transparency and the honest food that they deserve.
And the more you know, the more you grow,
I love
right?
that.
In all
Yes,
respects, in all
in all
respects.
respects.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh.
And just to talk about butchers for a second, butchers are overlooked in the meat supply chain. Here at the Good Meat Project, our origins are in butchery. The founder was a butcher, and she held butchery classes trying to educate consumers about whole animal utilization and using nose to tail. She was trained in Europe. And we honor butchers. They are artisans. They used to be the anchors of the community. They're the places that people would go to and say, "Hey, I'd really like to make a roast for my family this weekend. What do you got? Or what would you recommend? How do I cook this?" And we're trying to really breathe life into that here at the Good Meat Project and helping people understand how to talk to butchers. What questions might you want to ask? All of those resources are on our Good Meat Breakdown, and we really want people to more and more support butchers. Butchery is a beautiful craft. It is artisanal. The workforce needs developing, but how do we develop a workforce if the demand isn't there?
So, demand. I come up with an idea,
Ooh,
Michelle
let's hear it.
Thorne. It's called the 2x2 pledge.
Okay.
All you need is two numbers. One is two, the other is two, two. Here's the first two. I, Michael Olson, pledge to buy $2, an average of $2 worth of local food every day, less than the price of a convenience store candy bar. Plus, the other two is I pledge to convince two other people to take the 2x2 pledge too. Now, if we play this all out, pretty soon,
Exponentially.
exponentially, then in my marketplace, there's 500,000 people. If each one of them is buying $2 worth of local food every day, we would transform the local food chain. There would be lots of employment for butchers and bakers and candlestick makers again.
Sure.
And it wouldn't cost us an extra dime.
You're right. I don't know where we can get $2 of meat
Oh, an
realistically.
average. That's
But
just an
maybe
average
it's,
of $2, right?
$20, right?
Oh,
Maybe
sure.
you buy a roast for Thanksgiving, or you buy a rack of lamb from a local lamb producer, or
Well,
you
then
buy
that
a.
takes care of your whole week's worth of
Yeah.
commitment right there.
Sure.
But my notion is once you start buying $2 worth of local food every day, you're going to start educating yourself on what this local food means. And pretty soon, well, instead of $2, I'm just going to spend $10. I'm just going to eat local food. And so the money keeps growing and growing and growing, and the demand keeps growing and growing.
Yes. And but a lot of people have issues extrapolating that for meat, right? Because meat on average is more expensive than, say, a bunch of cilantro,
Rutabagas,
yeah,
yeah.
at the farmer's market, or a loaf of bread from a local bakery. Meat is it's an essential for a lot of people, but it is more expensive. So being able to extrapolate that cost is different, but that's why we try to encourage people to buy in bulk, because over when you look at the time, you can have a whole cow in your freezer for a year and you're only paying one price per pound, no matter what the fluctuation in the price of meat is.
Good idea, good meat. Where you get it, start at the Good Meat Project. Michelle Thorne and her crew will help you out up there in Portland, Oregon, or wherever you happen to be. And let's all, look at our local food economy and realize it's not just our local food economy, it is us. And we can take care of us much better than they can take care of us. Michelle Thorne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. This has been great.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.